From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in your car, a car that you own as opposed to an Uber or Lyft or a public transportation service. If each worker in your household owns at least one vehicle, your home is described as car-rich. And according to federal data, the number of car-rich households is on the rise in this country. The American Community Survey reports that household vehicle ownership has increased in cities where ride-sharing is most heavily used. It's also on the rise in America's most transit-oriented cities. And that leads us to a number of questions, the first being, why? There are many reasons, and we're going to dive into them this hour with our guests. We'll also talk about how car ownership and ride-sharing services are impacting public transportation. Is investment in those services warranted if the increase in car ownership is expected to continue? It's a conversation about how mobility is changing, and maybe a little bit of kind of a counter-notion to a lot of the discussions about urbanism, multimodal transportation, this movement towards everything from walkable communities, bike-friendly communities, multimodal communities. It's a bit of a pushback for the car. It's like the empire strikes back and the empire's the car. I'd like to welcome our guest for the hour. Arian Horbovitz is the creator of the Urban Phoenix blog and now a turncoat. He drives for Uber and Lyft. I'm mostly kidding. No, that's good.
I get that a lot.
And by the way, Uber and Lyft drivers, I'm actually totally kidding. And I've taken Uber and Lyft. But you've been driving for Uber and Lyft for how long now?
A few months now.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about that in just a second. Hello again to Roger Brown, creative consultant for the Community Design Center of Rochester. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Evan.
How long have you been driving for Uber and Lyft?
I have driven, though. I have ridden Uber and Lyft.
But you're not an Uber and Lyft driver.
But I'm not a driver.
No. Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Shannon Ely is a member of the Office of Future Leadership for the Rochester Chamber of Commerce. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So, Arian, I want to start with you because you wrote about not only this issue on the Urban Phoenix blog, but you also talked about your experience as an Uber and Lyft driver. And some of the, I think a good place to start is this idea that, well, Uber and Lyft just kind of joins the landscape. You're making the argument that you cannot understate the impact Uber and Lyft have had even in the last 5 years, right?
Absolutely. I think the thing that the first thing I wanted, kind of the myth that I wanted to dispel, is that Uber and Lyft, I hear this from so many people, oh, you're just driving people back and forth from to and from the bars. And that's not it at all. Uber and Lyft has become an essential, integral part of our transportation fabric here in this country. To give you some interesting data, in the last 25 years or so, we've seen the same trend. As median household income increases, so does car ownership, and surprisingly, so does transit ridership. The idea is when people are more employed, when people are more financially secure, they're moving around no matter what mode of transportation they're using. Okay, so that's true up until about 2014, when the median household income skyrockets. And so does car ownership. And then all of a sudden, transit ridership at the same time goes down, which again is counter to the trend for the last 25 years. So you have to ask yourself, why is this happening? Why are we seeing an increase in our economy? And where we usually see an increase in transit ridership, we're seeing a decrease. Well, in that same period of time, from 2014 to 2017, Uber alone saw an increase of 1 million rides from 1 million rides per day to 5.5 million rides per day.
Wow.
You can't look at that and say that there isn't something. The interesting thing is experts were kind of expecting, I think initially, that Uber and Lyft was going to cut into the amount of people driving cars or owning cars. It's actually doing just the opposite. It's cutting into the number of people, it appears, that are taking transit as a kind of a scalable transportation option for folks who would maybe typically ride the bus, but maybe today they don't want to because it's 20 degrees outside and snowing.
So Roger, is urbanism dead?
No, urban isn't dead, but as long as this country maintains its gigantic car culture, urbanism is going to take a back seat for a while. When I say urbanism, there's two things going on in this country. The cities are realizing an increase in population and in people like cities. And at the same time, people still like the suburbs. So out in the suburbs, all the snout houses are still being constructed and highways are still being, you know, used. So I think eventually, and my guess is that as soon as gas prices and this increase to a to the way it did a few years ago, what, in the 70s or 80s, you're going to maintain this trend where cars are still going to increase and so forth. As soon as those gas prices go up, I think you're going to see a dramatic change.
So is this a case, and we're going to get sort of the chamber position in just a second, Shannon. Is this a case where I think the logical idea of, well, the economy is better in some indicators, and I realize, by the way, when we say the economy is better, you can't just look at the Dow. You can't even just look at the unemployment rate because there's so much. You really have to look at wages. You have to look at how people are doing household to household, not just where the money is concentrated at the top. But to some degree, there's been this idea, well, if the economy gets better, more people will have disposable income and they'll just buy cars. True or not true, based on data, based on research?
Yeah, it is true. I mean, cars get bigger. The other things, the other data that's kind of spiked as well is it's not just car ownership. It's vehicle miles traveled, which was down for many, many years, almost a decade. Vehicle miles traveled per day. The idea is, you know, people were living closer to where they were working, especially, you know, during the economic downturn. Now that the economy is better, and we see this pretty much traditionally, vehicle miles driven is up. And that's, you know, that is that tends to be a result of a stronger economy. As the economy increases, a lot of times we see more kind of suburban sprawl. So these are, you know, these are trends that we've seen before, and we should anticipate in this time.
Okay, and that's why you kind of tie it to the notion of, well, we'll just wait for gas prices to change the equation.
Well, there's another thing. This country is very much focused on the individual, whereas other countries, let's say Europe or the European continent, are a little more focused on community. And Canada also is the same way. And, you know, so this individualism keeps the idea of the single-use vehicle in the forefront. And the idea of being able to do whatever you want to do is still there. And, you know, if that maintains itself, you know, we'll have more cars.
If I could just slide in real quick. I really think that what we're seeing is people, all things being equal, prefer personalized, comfortable, and convenient transportation. It's really, really difficult. I went 20 months without having a car on the road just recently. I just recently put my car back on the road. That's kind of something that led me to do Uber and Lyft. I thought it would be a kind of interesting experiment. But I went 20 months without it. Let me tell you, in this city that sprawls as much as it does, it is doable. I encourage people to try it. I encourage people to diminish their car use and try to use other forms of transportation. Let me tell you what, it is not easy. It is not an easy thing to do, especially this time of year when it's snowing, it's cold in the morning, you're out in the dark waiting for a bus or biking to work. That is a difficult thing to do. So I completely understand people wanting to make the choice if they have the means for more comfortable transportation, personalized transportation, convenient transportation, if they can afford it. And the thing is, car ownership and being able to own a car, or now being able to own, you know, have that experience of being in a car in the morning instead of, say, a bus, is it's very approachable in this country compared to most of the rest of the world. And, you know, as you said, certainly that adds a lot to why our culture is so car-centric. It is actually a lot cheaper in this country to drive a car and a lot more convenient. We just have more highways, more access.
Well, let me ask Shannon Ely from the chamber before we get to our first phone call, which is already ringing. People have a lot to add to the discussion on how we're getting around, why we're making these choices. Would your choices change if conditions change? What would it take? Do you want to see other options? And what do you make of this data that indicates we're owning and driving cars more than we ever have in the last decade? It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Shannon, one of the questions we tend to have when we look at national trends is whether they sort of track locally. And this may be a harder one to track. What do we know about that here?
So it is a little hard to track the impact that ride sharing may have had on car ownership in Rochester, because we only recently, summer 2017, got that. So the data is a little bit behind. Car ownership in Rochester over the past decade has been relatively flat. Only about 10% of households have no car available. And it's borne out through the choices, you know, this conversation. 80% of people not only commute via car, but do so alone. So the sense that you can be autonomous in your vehicle door to door is definitely a preference here. And there's questions, you know, what causes that? Like Arian said, the weather is definitely a big focus. But just the fact of the matter is that not everyone has that ability. Mm-hmm. And so many of the middle to low income jobs are located in the outer rim of Monroe mm-hmm. County. And unfortunately, that's not where those workers are located. So that's where we find the issue in business is connecting the workers to the skilled level positions. So that's part of our challenge at the chamber.
Arian, were you surprised as an Uber and Lyft driver that so much of your work is just taking people to work?
Yes. That was the number one shock. This has been part almost of a fascinating social experiment for me as much as anything. I've actually done very well as an Uber and Lyft driver, and I actually very much enjoy it. But, you know, I talk to a lot of my riders, and, you know, I get that sense. I really thought that it was going to be driving people to and from entertainment destinations. And what I would say easily 60 to 75% of my ridership is, it's college students that obviously don't have, you know, ready access to a car on campus. And it's folks that are going from retail jobs, maybe in Henrietta, elder care facilities, the University of Rochester Medical Center, they're going from there to their homes. And these are people that tell me, they said, look, you know, I've had a long day. I worked 14 hours today and I could have taken the bus home, which would have taken me an hour and 10 minutes. I'm going to take an Uber instead. It's going to take me 15 and I can actually spend some time with my family. And to hear these stories, and this is anecdotal, I get it, but it kind of fits in with the narrative of what's happening, is people are saying once in a while, this is where this was not an option before, riding, you know, I was riding the bus every day. Now this is an occasional option. I can't afford it every day, but on those days where I need to be home a little bit earlier, I'm working a little bit later, and I'm a little more tired, or the weather is really bad, this is a great option for me, and that's what I'm seeing across the board.
Let's get some phone calls, because we've got a lot of different directions to take this as we talk about our transit habits that are changing, at least for now, back in slightly in favor of the car, though Roger Brown warns us that's not necessarily going to be long-term. Let me get Lisa first. Go ahead, Lisa.
Yes, thank you for this discussion. I really appreciate the opportunity to listen and to comment. Minimum wage, had it kept track with inflation from 1965, would be $26 an hour right now. Right now, a living wage is $19 an hour. Less than that, and you need to work two or three jobs to have a decent life. So you're not going to be able to wait for a bus. You're not going to be able to get onto your yuppie bicycle and pedal across town and help the environment. And I think we have to, you know, have these discussions include the true economics. Yeah, you know, the indicators say that the economy's better. Well, it's not if you're not making more than $19 an hour. So thank you for this.
Yeah, Lisa, thank you. I mean, I think that's a really fair point. Roger Brown, if we just look at an unemployment rate, if we ignore all of the reasons that people make decisions for transit, I think we're going to miss a lot of why people make decisions and what it says about our economy.
Well, you know, if you looked at a map of Rochester in the late 30s and looked at the transit system, and I'm going to say streetcar because the streetcar was a huge transit vehicle in the late 30s, early 40s, and then of course the car industry took over and wiped it all out. But for a while there, you really had a great opportunity to reach everybody in the city. That streetcar system went all over the place. And what is really lacking here, what is really lacking here is, in fact, a system, and you could say of buses, that would be as prolific as there was back in the 30s. And it's not here. It's very hard to not only go to work, but to go to actually daily life things like shopping for food and going to a doctor's appointment or whatever, if that system was a lot more pronounced here in this town, it would be a hell of a lot easier for people mm-hmm. to get around. And people kick me for saying this, but I think there's two things. I think they have to raise, believe it or not, the bus fare to get some more income, and also gas taxes. Both of those things could be, if instituted, could provide potentially the dollars to make things happen.
Things happen. What's the first thing that's on your list that you'd like to see happen if we raise the gas tax, if we raise bus fares?
We tried to throw out the idea of bus fares just to generate more income. The gas tax would really do it big time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably what I would go after. And obviously that's a real unpopular thing. But in around the world and other countries, those gas taxes have done a lot to feed their transportation systems.
Gas tax as a way of changing not only changing behavior, but also funding other systems.
Sure.
Okay. Before I turn to Shannon, who's not going to want to weigh in with an opinion, I'm sure, on a gas tax, I'll ask Arian if you do. Do you support that?
I do. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I say gas tax, a higher gas tax, maybe even a significantly higher gas tax.
And for those, for anybody who says, well, you're taking money away from the average American, I would remind people this is, I like to ride Amtrak, right? And I get this so often, people, oh, it's government subsidized, it's subsidized transit. There is no more subsidized transportation system by far in a way in this country than the automobile, than roads. Automakers are subsidized at hundreds of billions of dollars. Our road systems cost, nobody has any idea how much it costs to build and maintain a bridge, a single bridge. People have no idea that we take so for granted how much our road and transit infrastructure costs and how cheap, again, compared to the rest of the world, it is to drive here. And I think we have to start getting smart about taking from one and putting into the other pot, because why is this happening? Why are we choosing cars at such a higher rate? Why are we choosing rideshare now at such a higher, an increased rate over transit? It is an indictment of our transit system and how little the investment is in our transit system, especially compared per capita to so many of the other industrialized countries around the globe. And, so many of our big problems that we have here in this country is because transit is not invested in enough, not even close. So I am for that idea very much. I know that's probably not a popular idea, but it is a necessary one in my mind.
All right. Without weighing in on a gas tax, which you could do if you like from the Chamber of Commerce perspective, when we look at sort of the economic picture here, are there any surprises that stand out to you about the changes of behavior and what you're seeing in terms of transportation, Shannon?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, the chamber very much supported the implementation of rideshare in upstate. It has shown to have a very positive impact on local communities and economies. People are able to get places that are not as accessible by transit in terms of spending on entertainment, drunk people going from bar to bar, and I'm sure you see your fair share. But,
oh, yes.
There's varying numbers from Uber and Lyft as far as their economic impact. But mm-hmm. Overall, from the chamber's standpoint, from our member's standpoint, the more mobile people are, the more they can actually access their products and services. It's a good thing.
Yeah, real quick, just to tag onto that, I'm not as against rideshare as most urbanists are for a couple of reasons. One, while it might add to congestion, it could also it kind of quells the parking conversation a little bit in our cities, whereas if you can give people kind of more fluid access to a vehicle within the city, you don't have to, parking lots aren't such a big deal. The other piece of it is, while I know there's negative environmental impact and again congestion impact, you're right. It does give people the opportunity to explore their city in a different way, and it does give another option to people as a whole.
All right, let me get back to your phone calls, and this is David in Rochester next. Go ahead, David.
Thank you for taking my call, and I'll take the answer offline.
Sure.
In the late 50s, there was an author by the name of Vance Packard who wrote a book called A Nation of Strangers. I highly recommend it in view of this discussion we are having. I'm bus dependent. I can't drive. I sit at the bus station, or I sit on my porch during the day when I'm not taking the bus. And I mean, multiple cars. This is a South Plymouth Avenue going by, one driver. Not multiple people with needs, one driver. This is unsustainable. And what mm-hmm. isn't addressed is with this insane, you know, car-driven economy, the environmental impact of it. Mm-hmm. And it's just an unsustainable system. Eventually, it's going to crash. And then what are people going to do when they shorted mass transit for all these years? I'll take the answer offline. Thank you.
David, thank you. Thoughts from our guests?
Well, I think that the social aspect of it is really interesting. And I've thought about this as far as the idea of, having more people from all different walks of life take the bus and mingle with everybody and really get a great feeling for what the city and what life is all about. And I think that's a very big plus in transportation.
Okay.
Definitely. I can't agree more. As somebody who was born in Chicago, but has also lived here most of my life, I take the bus quite often, even though I own a car, because I see it as a better choice, both for the environment, for the community, and just it's a better choice in general. Mass transit is just better for cities. It takes cars off roads. It saves that one car that can add to the other billion cars of congestion. But you're right. There is a very human aspect to mass transit where you can connect with your fellow man or woman. I've had lots of wonderful conversations riding public transit just here in Rochester on the bus. You can really see a cross section of people and of humanity, and that's a very beautiful thing. My question is this, and I think we all have to ask ourselves this. Are we a culture? Is this a nation that puts value on that? How much as a nation as a whole? I mean, folks in cities, I think, are much more aware of this, and they're in cities because I think they like that chance meeting on the street. They like to spontaneously connect with somebody or see somebody or meet somebody. But I think, I wonder if this country as a whole is more averse to that than other parts of the world. I think you mentioned it. I think we are slightly, we choose to isolate. And I think that shows in where we live. We choose to, increasingly live far away from people. We put our fences up. We drive in our cars alone. And everything about our society says that we want to separate. And when given the option to ride mass transit or to live more in an urban area, we still continue to see people push away from each other. And I think we have to ask ourselves as a culture, what does that mean? And where do we go from there with that?
The beauty of this resurgence back to the city, back to Rochester, is really good to see. There are a lot of people out there who really do like an urban lifestyle, and they want to be with and mingle with and with other people. And it's as long as this, I think that this will continue in our city, especially with some of the initiatives that are going on right now to try to make the city much more vibrant and vital. Again, it's the idea of, for a group of people, the idea of community is very important to them. Yes.
Was it Robert Frost wrote, "Good fences make good neighbors," but I don't think he meant that literally, did he? I think he was offering a commentary on a neighbor who wanted a fence. English and lit teachers, please, professors, email me on the meaning of... What's the name of that poem? Now I'm in real trouble with my old English professor. Amending Wall.
Oh gosh.
I'm in so much
Where's
trouble.
My wife, Amanda, you know.
Thank you. Edawson at WXXI.org or connections at WXXI.org. School me on what Frost meant about fences, because I don't think he really liked them, but I could be wrong. Mike in Rochester is next. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. My question is, how safe do women feel on public transportation systems? Because my daughter's always saying she's getting hit on and she doesn't feel safe using the public transit, the buses in Rochester.
Okay.
And I'll take my answer offline. Thank
you. Mike, thank you. I'll start with Shannon. Do you feel comfortable taking public transit?
Sure. So I went through a period of about a year where I was commuting from Spencerport to Rochester. We were what you call a car poor household, had just one for two workers. And I can honestly say not any more than any other public situation, standing in line at Wegmans. I mean, just like Arian said, you come across a full cross-section of people. And always felt very secure. I also lived in New York City and Brooklyn, so maybe I was a little more equipped. But no, I mean, I think bus drivers are very attentive. And overall, it was a very positive experience. And similar to Arian, I felt very connected to my community riding public transit.
Okay.
You know, talking about safety, I will say this, not necessarily from a social standpoint of safety, from a standpoint of safety as far as miles driven, the bus is actually, believe it or not, the safest way to travel. The car is by far and away the most unsafe to travel. So when we're talking about actual physical safety as far as bodily harm, you are so much. I can't remember how many times you are. It's like it's insane how many times you safer you are on a bus than you are in a car.
And just looking at accident injury.
When you talk about accidents, yeah, sure. Exactly. 40,000 people die a year from automobile accidents. That's the same number of people that die from breast cancer. So when we look at cars versus public transportation, a lot of this is about safety too. Now, when we're talking about the social aspect of being on a bus, you are going to come across man or woman, and of course, you know, women face an unfortunate but very realistic set of stressors when sometimes approaching dense urban areas. You are going to come across folks that are things that you see that maybe are a little disturbing. It's going to happen. And what I see that it does is it really, and I can't obviously speak from a woman's perspective. It would be very it'd be bad for me to do. From a perspective in general, as just seeing what's out there, what's reality, you do get a better sense of kind of what our city is, what our community is as a whole.
Step outside the bubble.
Good and bad, absolutely. Yeah. That being said, I have had, friends of mine that are women that say, you know, I've gotten catcalled enough walking down the street or riding public transportation. I'm tired of it, and I don't want to be a part of it. So there are multiple sides to that conversation.
Yeah, and I would just say I think that's a good point. Mike in Rochester, you know, if your daughter is not feeling safe about it, I mean, I certainly would not want to discount her experience. I do think it's valuable to hear sort of case by case.
Definitely.
Shannon saying that her experience has been essentially very positive and safe.
That's a great point.
You know, but it's also really heartening to hear from Shannon that you felt that the people in charge of the public transit that you were on were very attentive to anything that might be astray.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important.
Thank you for clearing up. I didn't mean to, obviously,
oh,
everyone's
I don't think
experience
discounted.
Is unique
no,
and,
no.
And absolutely 100% valid. I did not mean to
to
take away any kind of validation. We all need to be aware, and if we feel uncomfortable with something, we need to make a change.
You want to add to that, Roger?
Well, I was going to say things would improve dramatically along all different fronts if there was, in fact, a more aggressive bus system. Or even I won't get into streetcars, but a bus system where the bus system itself was something that was looked upon not as a second or third or fourth means of transportation, but as a prime way of getting around. And I think it would help dramatically.
Mm-hmm. All right. I see our phone ringing again. It's been ringing all hour. Jane in Rochester next. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, I remember very well back in the 50s going with my grandmother on the bus, and it was a real treat. They had those double-decker buses. Mm-hmm. They went into all the neighborhoods that I knew of. And there was a bus literally every 15 minutes. And I loved it when we could climb up on that top double-decker bus. So it was a real treat. But we've had a lot of changes since then. And if you recall, all of those auto ads that we've seen on television done by Mad Men, they sell us not so much what we need as what we want. And some of those things are freedom and escape and status and even ID. and conspicuous consumption comes in there. So we have a lot to hewn down before we get people thinking in a more pragmatic way and certainly altruistically for the environment. So how do you do that? And in the 50s, the car belonged to the man. I don't care if the wife was at home with five children all day. He took the car and parked it at work. And so, yes, it's kind of a criticism. I think that was very, very selfish. And it's like they thought a man ought to have a car. And is there any opinion there on your panel as to getting this these ideas, especially away from the male gender? Thanks a lot.
Jane, thank you. So,
great call.
Arian has written about the car as identity. And that ties into what Jane's saying there at the end there.
Sure.
I mean, I certainly, again, wouldn't discount her impression, if that's her impression, that there was this idea that, well, the man takes the car, and if there's a car in a household, the man will have it.
Yeah.
You've written about the challenge we're going to face, and I'm curious to know what you all think about if we really move into a multimodal future, is there sort of a gender component, and do men have a hard time giving up the car or an automobile or a truck as part of identity?
It's a control component. The automobile gives you maximum control over your life, right? That's what it does. When you have that car in your driveway, you can go anywhere, do anything, see anyone or not. That gives you ultimate control. So when the man of the household took the car for the day, that was the man saying, I am still in control. I have the ability to go where I want to go. You still have to stay home and take care of, and it's, you know, such an unfortunate thing. But, you know, that the interesting thing is, as you know, women have you know, risen in our society to a closer to equality. Hopefully that improves in our future and continues to improve. You know, you're seeing this, you know, with people now as a whole, whether it's men or women, the car gives you control, and control gives you power, and power gives you a feeling. And if you take that away, if you impose a gas tax, if you take that four-lane road that doesn't need to be four lanes and take it down to two because it's safer and actually better for the businesses that line that street, people will freak out because they identify so much with the control of power of their car, being able to get to where they need to go as quickly as humanly possible. And taking that away, even slightly, makes people very angry and at times aggressive.
Yeah, Shannon?
Well, I mean, one thing that we know is it's expensive to own a car. The cost of car ownership, I don't know the exact amount, but it's, you know, multiple $1,000s a year when you add everything up. But that being said, I think as women have achieved closer to economic equality, the feeling is sort of now, well, you're going to take my car when you pry from my cold, dead hands. You know, it's the control, it's the equality, and it's being able to be mobile. And I think that does play into the culture. I mean, as much as I appreciate and like public transit personally, I can absolutely relate to just the freedom and mm-hmm. that empowerment. So.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Roger.
I do think that gender equality is really becoming, you know, the norm almost, the way things are going and will continue to. We are a one-car family now, Vicki and I, have been for maybe 6 years. And what is interesting, both of us have different places to go, different things that we need to have done. Parts of our individual professions require attendance at meetings and different things. And it's really interesting to see us sort of compromise with each other and coordinate our activities around this one car. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. And I think that we should be doing more of this as a country of using that one car, and you can do it. It works great. And both sexes are equal in how they, you know, manipulate and work with the one vehicle we have.
Okay. All right. Well, we got a lot more to share with your feedback on the issue of the bit of a resurgence in car driving and ownership in this country. That's what the data is showing, as well as a decrease in transit use. And there have been studies on the impact of investing in public transit. Does it sort of automatically mean less car ridership? And the answer is not necessarily. And there's some interesting things to understand about that. We're having a conversation, and we'll include your feedback on the other side of this break, with Roger Brown from the Community Design Center of Rochester, Shannon Ely from the Rochester Chamber, the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce, and Arian Horbovitz from the Urban Phoenix blog. and from the world of Uber and Lyft driving. Let's get that only break and come back right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, Harry Potter is on Broadway and a new exhibit opens in New York City. 22 years after the release of the first book, the phenomenon endures, but we ask the question next hour, can there ever be another book series like it? The world has changed a lot in the intervening two decades. We'll talk about what makes Harry Potter such a phenomenon even still, and there are plenty of superfans who will join the discussion next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Dee in Rochester on the phone next. Go ahead, Dee.
Hi, yes. Well, I guess my point would be, like, I do own a car, and I drive people with disabilities around for my job. But when I see Uber driving around, I think that's pretty cool, and I give kudos to people who could afford that. But then I look at people at the bus stops, and some of them don't have shelters, some of them don't have benches, and the people are getting wet. They're in snow. I used to take the bus when I was a child up until I was 13 on welfare, and I hated it. I said to myself, once I get older, I'm in a car and I'm never taking a bus again. Just because of the humiliation I felt standing in the rain and just watching so many cars go by as a child. So now I kind of have a lot of empathy for people who are at the bus stops, and I see them with no benches, no shelter. So if I was a poor person and I had a couple extra bucks, I would take Uber. But the sad thing is, poor people don't have that kind of choice. So Rochester needs to do a better job making the transparent the bus stops more appropriate and just more user-friendly. I have people that take Lyft Line, and for them to get an appointment just to go to their job, they have to go like an hour to an hour and a half earlier and sit just to go to work. So City of Rochester needs to figure something out. And even Brighton, you know, you don't see a lot of shelters in Brighton. You don't even see any benches. So, I mean, kudos to everyone that can afford to own a car like myself and to use Uber. But, you know, the sad thing is poor people have very few choices, if any. And that was just my comment.
Dee, thank you. Some thoughts from our guests on that? Shannon?
Sure. There are some people that simply cannot access ride sharing. Low income, underserved rural communities, even people that don't have credit cards or smartphones. Mm-hmm. You don't think about how easy it is just to open that app, but it's not a possibility for a lot of even our residents here.
Well, again, it's a perfect example of if, in fact, the bus system here was enhanced, whether it's the addition of shelters or better, you know, waiting conditions, or if there were more buses that would let's say, and just increase the performance of headways, it would dramatically, I think, increase the opportunities for, you know, the low-income community that we have.
Yeah, and, you know, I would say that what we're seeing as far as people maybe turning away from transit in favor slightly, it's down, 6-7%, I think, across the nation. What we're seeing is our transit systems are just underfunded. They're just not robust enough. And by saying that, that is the case in our community, and I'm not putting that is, to me, not on RTS. I think RTS does a nice job, a really nice job, with the resources that they have. Unfortunately, the funding nationwide, not just in Rochester, but in almost every city USA, the funding is just not there for transit, and the prioritization of transit is not there. Because anytime, anybody understands this, when you try to fund something that primarily focuses on socioeconomic class, people will say, "Well, you're using my tax dollars, in a way that I don't want," and it's very, very difficult to garner funding because, you know, here in Rochester, that's the primary ridership here. That's the reality. If you have money, you buy a car. If you don't, you ride the bus, and you have to take a back seat to other transportation methods, and your commute is going to be longer. And people don't realize what that does. If you have to spend 2 hours on a bus a day, where if you had a car, you could spend 25 minutes, think of what that takes away from your life. How do you do what you need to do with your family? How do you need to do what you need to do at home? That's something we don't often think about. So I think in general, it's this whole movement is an indictment of the fact that our transit systems are so underfunded, and we have to start seeing the fact that transit is the best way for our poorer populations to step up and to, you know, to access jobs and resources that they need every day.
Okay,
we are in a transition period in our history. In that, in the future, as I have mentioned before, I think what's going to dramatically change a lot of things is, in fact, the cost of fuel. And when that happens, I think you're going to find just like occurred in the 70s or 80s or exactly when the price of gas was terrible, it was like the Toyota Corolla reared up there and became the vehicle of choice. Now it's fascinating to see the vehicle of choice as being very large SUVs and trucks. And it just shows what's going on out there in the world of the single-use vehicle. But I think the cost of gas will change that dramatically.
Before I come back to some of the feedback from our audience, I want to touch on a study that Cornell did in conjunction with the University of Washington, Tacoma, asking the question, does investment in public transit decrease traffic congestion? In other words, do people drive cars less often if we invest in public transit? And the assumption is yes. The answer is yes, sometimes. Let me go ahead and read from that, and then we'll ask our guests to weigh in. With one caveat in mind, they concluded some of their paper with the idea that if you go to sort of mid and smaller size markets, it's a bit of a different thing, that you can't just put public transit out there and assume car ridership declines the way it might in a more sort of big city urban environment. Let me read from Cornell. Quote, on one hand, an increase in transit supply may cause some commuters to substitute transit travel for trips previously taken by automobile, the substitution effect, thereby decreasing car travel. On the other hand, by reducing congestion, increasing accessibility, increasing economic activity, and/or attracting additional residents and workers to the area, transit investment may generate additional automobile trips that were previously not undertaken. We call this the induced demand effect. They find that owing to the countervailing effects of substitution and induced demand, the effects of increases in public transit supply on car travel depend on the time horizon. In the short run, when accounting for the substitution effect only, they find that on average, a 10% increase in transit capacity leads to a 0.7% reduction in car travel. However, transit has no effect on auto travel in the medium run, as latent and induced demand offset the substitution effect. And in the long run, when accounting for both substitution and induced demand, they find that on average, a 10% increase in transit capacity is associated with a 0.4% increase in car travel, end quote. I think there's something a little bit to consider there. That last idea, wow, over the long run, an increase in transit means an increase in car driving. That's also because you're increasing the number of people who live in an area. You're attracting more people because economic prospects are better. There's more options. So yes, you get more car travel, a little. You get a lot more transit use, and you get more people. But Roger, what do you make of
that? Well, I can't imagine what it would be like in these large cities. I'm not so sure about medium-sized cities, but large cities that do, in fact, absolutely rely on on the subway and on transit and streetcars and all that. Like, well, heck, like New York, like Washington, D.C. And I, you know, I've been in those cities. And when you see, you know, all those people using those facilities, you can't imagine what it'd be like if they didn't exist, and what our streets would be all about. In that situation, when you go around the world and see conditions in Europe with their public transportation, they really seem to be taking cars and vehicles off the road because of their just using their transit systems.
Okay.
I would say I'm very critical of when we invest in transit, because in this country, what where are you investing in that transit? For example, the Q Line in Detroit. I'm very critical of things like the Q Line and transit projects. It's a streetcar, by the way, in Detroit. It's really it goes along Woodward Avenue, north-south there. That's where all their revitalization in that city is just exploding. It's incredible there. We went there, I think, a year or two ago, my wife and I. Also, the Cincinnati Bell Connector. Again, both of these projects have led to tremendous financial investment in those areas, millions, billions of dollars. Huge amounts of money has been invested. But the ridership of these things is 40% or so below expectations. Furthermore, they're not servicing the people who actually need transit. So what are you building for? I love to hear people talk about transit as an economic generator. We have to remember that transit at its best is to move, its purpose is to move people, and specifically people that don't have other options. So when we look at transit in this country, what we find, a lot of the transit investment that we're seeing are in areas that are already wealthy or receiving or seeing seeing growth. Are we using transit to grow income, to grow economic resurgence for a wealthier class, or are we using it, new transit projects, to give opportunities, greater opportunities to our struggling classes?
All right, a listener writes to say, I'm glad I cannot afford a car. One less person carrying out short-term interest in the face of long-term climate catastrophe isn't a bad thing. We've heard a number of those kind of comments recently. Adam, who is the president of Rochester Clinical Research, writes to us to say that recognizing transportation can be difficult, our company arranges Uber transportation for our research study volunteers so that they can make their appointments at our office. We pay the Uber driver, and people don't need to have the Uber app or even a smartphone. Probably not a surprise to the Uber driver in the room that you see more of this.
No, definitely. You know, I see, like I said, so much of my ridership is college students. So much of my ridership is people who make the choice not to have a car. Now you're seeing businesses get involved and organizations get involved in providing rides for people who need them. It's becoming very diverse, and different organizations across the community are starting to really utilize this as a legitimate form of transportation for people they're serving.
We haven't. It's really good that this came up, because we haven't talked about another major aspect of, mass transit versus the individual car is, in fact, environmental conditions, which is, in a way, one of the first things that was discussed when the subject of car versus rapid mass transit came up, is the environmental conditions. Mm-hmm. And it just keeps on going. Every time the number of cars increases and so forth, that just increases the environmental stuff.
And Shannon, as we look at what attracts economic activity, it's interesting to note that if Rochester was probably never really realistically going to get Amazon's HQ2, they, like just about every other city, made a bid. And there were a lot of people involved in that. And Amazon made clear that they wanted mass transit as an option. Is our city well-equipped enough not to get necessarily Amazon, but other sort of economic drivers with when it comes to transit options?
I think we have a little bit of a ways to go, absolutely. I think, like Arian said, RTS does a great job with the resources they have. The Reimagine RTS project looks to address some of those issues. But that being said, we can't get workers to some of our existing businesses, so it's a little tough to look at somebody the size of Amazon and meeting their needs.
All right, let me grab another phone call, and we could have done it all day here. If I can't get your emails and phone calls, I apologize just so much this hour. Noel in Rochester next. Go ahead, Noel.
Hey, Evan. So this is just an observation about the usership of the bus system. Now, I grew up in Santa Monica and rode the bus by myself and with my playmate from West LA to Santa Monica Beach while we were in elementary school. No sweat. Everybody did it. Simple as hell. I come to Rochester in 2007, and we have one car in East Rochester. I'm riding the bus back and forth. I'm even using my bicycle to go home from the gymnasium, But one day I go to pick up my two granddaughters from the charter school and go out Monroe Avenue to go to Sunday school class. And the girls go to an integrated charter school But when those girls got on that bus, they were freaked out, and I was embarrassed. And I just think that somehow or another, we need to get younger people on the bus so that they're not so culturally alien in that environment. Because, you know, if I say ride the bus, they just immediately come back and say, why aren't you driving?
Yeah, yeah.
I just find that cultural dynamic disappointing.
Yeah, we're down to our last 30 seconds. It's a powerful point that, you know, that he's trying to make there. How are we going to do that? I guess start young.
Definitely start young.
Multimodal options.
Yes. I would say anybody that's interested in it, get your kids, to understand the important environmental and social positives of mass transit. Absolutely.
Okay, Roger.
Well, yeah, I think again, it's trying to promote and make better the visual aspects of the bus system, and the more that can be increased, I just think that will occur where more people will ride that bus with less trepidation.
Roger, thanks for being here. Roger is a creative consultant for the Community Design Center of Rochester. Always a good conversation.
Thanks.
Thank you. Shannon Ely, who is the manager of the Office of Future Leadership for the Greater Rochester Chamber of Commerce. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And you might see Arian Horbovitz the next time you call Uber or Lyft, but you'll find him on the Urban Phoenix blog. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having us.
All right. A short break. Much more connections coming up.